Hey everybody, Dr. Ross Green here. Welcome to the December 2024 edition of the CPS podcast. Glad you're listening. I'm joined as always by our Director of Learning Resources and Support at Lives in the Balance, Kim Hopkins. Kim, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you?
I am doing well. Those of you who know me know that I've looked like a raccoon for the last week because of some surgery I had done on my nose. And if I was a raccoon, I wouldn't mind looking that way. But for all practical purposes, it looked like I had been in a very bad fight for the last week. Not my style. I was telling people you should see what the other guy looked like, but there was no other guy except for the guy who operated on my nose. But the cool part is the swelling and the black eyes are fading, and I'm starting to look like me again. And that's okay, since I was never really aspired to look like a raccoon. That part aside, we're talking about grit today. Grit. And what's interesting is we never talk about grit in the CPS model. Never. Which is interesting because lots of people are talking about grit these days. Parents want their kid to have grit. Educators want to teach their students to have grit. You have two kids. Do you want them to have grit?
Absolutely.
And if you were to empty the grit bottle sitting on your shelf, what would be in it?
I would say strength of character. I would say the ability to persevere when things are hard in particular. I would say being assertive and standing up for oneself and standing up for those who can't stand up for themselves.
Love that definition. It's broader than a lot of people's definitions. I'm relying on Dr. Angie Duckworth for a definition of grit here, because we don't really talk about grit in the CPS model. She defines grit simply as passion and perseverance toward long-term goals. And who wouldn't want that for their kid or for one of the students in their class? The reason this came up is because I was talking with a wonderful school psychologist about frustration responses in the last week. We talk a lot about frustration responses in the CPS model. We use concerning behavior and frustration response almost synonymously in the CPS model. And of course, what is the frustration response a response to? An expectation that a kid is having difficulty reliably meeting. Now, that stuff we talk a lot about. And of course, we always say that if you want to be early, truly proactive, you want to be focusing on the expectation the kid is having difficulty meeting that's causing the frustration response, rather than focus on the frustration response itself, which is late. And we're doing a lot of de-escalating these days with frustration responses. We're still doing a lot of restraining and secluding when kids have over-the-top frustration responses. Frustration responses aren't all bad, though. A frustration response lets us know that there's an expectation a kid is having difficulty meeting. Now, another thing, I'm digressing a little here. You don't have to have a frustration response to have an expectation you're having difficulty meeting. Every human being has expectations they're having difficulty meeting. The kids who get talked about the most, for better or worse, are the ones who have big frustration responses, what we call unlucky behaviors. But there are kids who have lucky frustration responses as well. But this school psychologist was pointing out that frustration is not all bad. It does let us know that a kid is having difficulty meeting an expectation, even though it's not a prerequisite. And we do want kids to be good at dealing with frustration. So she said to me, without frustration, There's no grit. Interesting. So that's interesting because we've been trying to teach kids how to deal with frustration a lot. We've been teaching them to be passionate about their goals and to persevere in the face of frustration. Now life is getting very interesting because here in the CPS model, we would say a few things. First of all, you left something out. Secondly, you may have gotten it backwards if you're talking about passion, perseverance, and not talking about problem solving, which may well come first. So it's not just two P's. It's not just passion and perseverance. It's passion, perseverance, and problem solving. I would say it's going to be very hard for a kid to, for any human being to persevere if they don't identify and solve the problems that are making it hard for them to achieve a goal in the first place. That, of course, is the main point of our podcast today. But I was reading something by a guy online named David, I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, Didau, D-Dow, D-I-D-A-U. He asked the following question. What if a student or kid is trying as hard as they are able? See, this is the interesting thing. I think that persevering is defined by many people as just keep trying hard. If at first you don't succeed, try again. And this is what we preach to kids, and that's fine. I would modify that a little bit. If at first you don't succeed, figure out what's making it hard for you to succeed and solve it so you can succeed. It's a little lengthy to become a limerick, but if at first you don't succeed, try again is insufficient. I'm all for trying again. Let's try again smart. Anyways, back to David Didau. What if a student is trying as hard as they are able? What if they've already tried a range of approaches and still failed? Is telling them that their performance can be enhanced with even greater effort likely to be motivational? Having a growth mindset, and of course, that's the work of Carol Dweck, and we've been talking about that a lot in society since about, well, for about the last 10 years. Having a growth mindset does not confer magical powers. Maybe we can all be cleverer, but maybe there's also a limit. Well, there is definitely a limit to the degree to which somebody should continue persisting and failing. There's a limit. There's a limit to how far passion is going to take you in the absence of figuring out what's interfering with your success and solving it. Perseverance and passion are only going to take you so far. So what's interesting is I don't think problem solving comes third. It's not passion, perseverance, and problem solving. It's problem solving, perseverance, and passion. Now, before we move on to how we've been going about teaching kids to have grit, what are your thoughts about that in your own two kids? And I know we're working here, Kim, with a more narrow definition of grit than what you had for your kids. But let's think about your two other kids you work with. What do you think about problem solving, perseverance, and passion as the definition of grit?
I think it fits quite nicely. If I think about my two, I would say my daughter sort of came here with just a little more grit in her pocket than my son did, right? Not that it's not something that we can't work on and we do work on, but I wouldn't say that she experienced a ton of frustration, which is why she has grit. I thought that was very interesting. Without frustration, there's no grit. I don't agree with that. I haven't seen that play out. I think, you know, if somebody's able to solve problems so they're not experiencing frustration, that certainly can put you on the road to increasing grit. But I don't think that frustration has to be part of the mix. And she's not an unlucky kid when it comes to her stress signal or frustration response anyway. And I don't think you need to be to develop grit. So I think that's interesting. And I was also looking up kind of and reading about ways that people talk about how you build grit, and they're really missing the how. You know, they're saying things like become more social, you know, deal with change. And these relate very much to the skills we're saying that kids struggle to access. So that's lovely, but we're missing the how when we say those things.
So the how is out there. I've got some activities that I found to build grit and resilience in children, 9 of them. And as I go through them, I'm not saying that any of them are bad. I'm just saying that none of them involve problem solving. And I think problem solving comes first. By the way, there is research saying that you're going to be a better problem solver if you have grit. But for me, that's asking the question in the wrong direction. I think that's great, but I think you're going to have more grit and be able to persevere more effectively if you know how to solve problems. So here's, I'm not belittling any of these, but here's 9 activities that I found for building grit and resilience for children. First, discuss their dreams and goals and the steps that would be required in order for the child to reach their goals. Hard to be passionate about something if you aren't sure about what it is that you should be passionate about. But there's no problem solving involved in discussing dreams and goals with kids. It's a fine thing. It doesn't help them when life gets hard. 2, encourage kids to conduct grit interviews. Interview parents, grandparents, neighbors, or other acquaintances who have worked hard toward a long-term goal. All right, there's the hard work piece, but not the problem-solving piece. Once again, I'm talking about being smart in being gritty. 3, share stories of gritty, famous people. Feels a little bit like 2 to me, but encourage a child to study famous people and their failures. Showing that perseverance through failure can lead to great success. Fantastic. 4. Whoops, 4 didn't print out very well for me. Hang on a second. Let me find 4. 4, teach about grit through nature. There's a lot of examples in nature of things, trees, animals that were successful through grit. 5, teach about grit through literature. Once again, all these are great. All these are, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But you know, and I'll go through the other ones in a minute, but for a very long time, we've been giving kids the incentive to persevere. We've been thinking that effort is the key. Effort's a good thing. Persevering's a good thing. Problem solving makes it possible. 6, ask, what's the hard part? This comes the closest to what we talk about in the CPS model. If a child is feeling discouraged or tempted to give up, ask them, what's the hard part? And after you've identified the challenge, ask the child what they could do to fix or overcome the hard part. Boy, that's close. It's in the ballpark. Of course, I'm going to go through all nine here, but I got three steps that are going to make that part a whole lot easier. I think we need to be really clear about this isn't just about asking what's the hard part and just about asking the kid what they could do to overcome or fix the hard part. Number seven, follow the hard thing rule. The rule has three parts. Number one, each member of the family has to do something hard. Number two, you have to finish what you start. Number three, no one gets to pick the hard thing for anyone else. So every kid gets to choose their own challenge. Great family practice at doing something hard. It's interesting. I've never really felt need to look for hard things in life. Life's hard. Life's hard. Kids are going to get a lot of practice at dealing with things that are hard just by breathing. Number eight, try the grit pie exercise. The pie represents an obstacle your child is facing. Each slice of pie symbolizes a cause of the problem. For each slice, analyze whether their thoughts about the problem are permanent or temporary, and whether they blame themselves or others. This is related to the fixed mindset versus growth mindset literature that Carol Dweck brought into our consciousness, and thankfully so. I love growth mindsets. I think that it's a whole lot easier to have a growth mindset if you have problem-solving skills, and a whole lot easier to fall into a fixed mindset if you don't know how to solve problems. And then finally, number nine, share your passions. Share your passions. Show your child your excitement about activities outside of working and parenting, and devote time to developing these passions. You know, my opinion, all good stuff, but not enough. Barely scratching the surface on problem solving. So this seems like a good time to talk about. I don't know if we need nine things to improve grit. I think we need three things. Step number one, the empathy step. And they touched upon this a little bit in those nine activities. Help kids figure out what's making it hard for them to meet a particular expectation. Lots of kids don't know. That's why we have drilling strategies, eight of them, to help people, to help caregivers, help kids figure out what's making it hard for them to meet a particular expectation. So I love the ask the kid part of those nine activities. I just think adults are going to need help helping kids identify what's making it hard for them to meet an expectation. Step number two, the define adult concern step. Let kids know why it's important that that expectation be met. I don't know if you have, I guess I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Do you have persistence or passion? This is interesting. It might actually be the adult who is passionate about a particular expectation, not the kid. And in the CPS model, we've always said, you know, the kid doesn't have to be passionate about the expectation. It's okay if the adult is passionate about it. I don't know if you're ever going to get the kid to be passionate about brushing their teeth before going to bed at night, though I suppose that exists. I wasn't one of them. So the adult might be more passionate about that, mostly perhaps based on experience or the looming threat of dental bills. But I don't know if the kid's going to be passionate about that. Do we want them to persist on it? Yeah. Most kids do without great difficulty. If they don't, you got a problem to solve. You got to figure out what's making it hard for the kid to meet that expectation. Sometimes adult passion for a particular expectation translates into adults trying too hard, pushing too hard, using motivational strategies to get kids to persevere without ever figuring out what's making it hard for the kid to meet a particular expectation. Kim, I'm wondering, I'm sure you're thinking as I'm talking here, I'm talking a lot. Any thoughts on what I've covered so far before I get to the third step?
A few, but I'm going to keep it short. I think, I was really stuck on that one that you read, you know, ask the kid what's the hard part and then ask them how to fix it. And I feel like we often forget that if they knew what the hard part was and or they knew how to fix it, they would, because things would go better for them. So that I got a little hung up on, and, you know, see certainly the relevance of the three steps of the CPS model. And I do think that passion, how to say this eloquently, I think that we must misunderstand kids sometimes and think that they're not passionate about things because they're having trouble solving problems, but we don't read it that way. We read it as they just, you know, don't care, or they, you know, they don't see the value or whatever, but that actually might not be the case if they knew how to solve the obstacles getting in their way to do the thing, right? So you're giving me a lot to think about today, which I appreciate.
Good. I don't often, since you and I tend to travel in the same circles and tend to think alike, I kind of fun for me to think that anything I'm saying is thought provoking. That's good. That's why we do this, of course. And of course, step number three in the CPS model is the invitation step. This is where kid and caregiver are processing solutions together, but solutions that have to meet those two criteria got to be realistic. We're not going to develop grit if the solutions that we are pursuing are not realistic. Those solutions don't work. And the solution has to be mutually satisfactory, meaning it has to address the concerns of both parties. So now this is not what I would call one-way grit or grit at all costs. I've come up with a solution and it is going to help me achieve my goal, but it is not sensitive to what's going on around me. I don't like that at all. And I'm not saying that's what the grit folks say, but I think that the mutually satisfactory part is absolutely critical. We don't want kids pursuing solutions that are blind to how they affect other people. I think a critical skill for the species, grit's great. Perseverance is great. Resilience is great. Solving problems in a way that takes not only your own concerns, but other people's concerns into account. I would probably put that number one on my list as it relates not to an individual kid, but to the species as a whole. Now, this is interesting because in the grit literature, they talk about the limits of talent. Talent will only get you so far. You've got to have grit too. And I agree with that. But the talent, of course, that I am most intrigued by is problem solving. And the cool part about that is you don't have to, you shouldn't have a fixed mindset on problem solving, because all kids can be engaged to one degree or another in learning how to solve the problems that are affecting their lives. We do it all the time, but it's three steps. It's not just think about what's getting in the way of you achieving your goal. It's achieving it in a way that is sensitive to other people as well. All right. So I probably should have started with this. But here I found this as well, are the five characteristics of grit: perseverance, resilience, courage, passion, conscientiousness. Amazing what you can find on something. We're missing one. That's a list of five. We're missing one. Problem solving. Those are my thoughts on grit. Kim, any other further thoughts to share?
Well, I was thinking about continuing to think about how we misunderstand and misread and like the opposite of grit, and how often when we're doing problem solving with kids that they will say things like, well, it's because I'm lazy. And you just know that that was something that someone offered as an explanation for why maybe they don't demonstrate grit and some of those lovely characteristics that you just read. And I'm often saying, you know, when we're teaching Plan B to folks, when a kid says that, that's an opportunity to say, that's what somebody who thought they were helping might have said as an explanation, but I don't think that's the case at all. Right? I think that there are some things that are difficult about the situation. If we understood that, we could work together to figure it out. I don't think you're lazy at all. So I was thinking a lot about that, the opposite of grit, and how sometimes we're messaging to kids, well, they just must not have these characteristics. And in fact, you know, I always reflect on where I was when I learned the model. I was working in residential care with 12 to 22 year olds who, I mean, really had been given up on by most adults in their lives. And once we started viewing them through these lenses, that they would do well if they could, and began problem solving with them, we saw different kids. Like, lo and behold, they had passion and they had courage, and, you know, and they became good problem solvers over time. And it was amazing, the transformation. So, back to how we adults are viewing what we're seeing in front of us, really, and how we can actually be helpful.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, of course, lazy is a fixed mindset. It's a term frequently applied to kids who are having difficulty meeting our expectations, along with the usual suspects: attention-seeking, manipulative, coercive, unmotivated, limit-testing. Not only are those fixed mindsets, they are not problem-solving mindsets. They make it sound like these are characteristics of a kid. It's the kid's fault that they're not succeeding. You can help that kid be passionate. You can help that kid persevere. But until you identify what's making it hard for the kid to meet the expectation you would passionately like them to meet, and until what's getting in their way is addressed through a collaborative and preferably proactive process, in other words, not in the heat of the moment, I have my doubts. I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday. This is December 2024, so we are in holiday season, even if you don't end up listening to the podcast in December 2024. We'll be back in January with another edition of the CPS podcast. Kim, thanks as always for joining me on this podcast, and I hope you have a great holiday too.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you. Take care, everybody.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.